Come, let us squeeze hands all around. Nay, let us squeeze ourselves into each other. Let us squeeze ourselves universally into the very milk and sperm of zombie takeout.
Welcome to episode 66 of Zombie Takeout,
Spermfest,
the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And we don't have any listeners submitted, so we're just going to jump right into the movie.
There's too much to do anyway here.
Yeah, this is going to be a big one, folks. It is from 2010, Moby Dick.
And, accompanied by...
We should point out, and that's why I didn't say immediately, you know, the sponsor yet, because we should point out, we've both read, or you read, I listened to the novel for this one.
And just almost shamefully, we could say for the first time.
First time since high school for me.
They didn't have it on my high school list.
I
figured out why.
And it was the seriously abridged version back in high school.
I bet.
So, point is, I'm just gonna warn you now, we're gonna digress into discussions of the book here and there, probably.
Yeah.
So, just be prepared. Especially given the movie. Anyway, that brings us to Scotto's impromptu plot summary, brought to you by The Spatter Inn, where it's better to sleep with a sober cannibal than a drunken Christian.
And also by Sonar. For fuck's sake, when you are looking for a deep sea creature, you use sonar.
Eventually they'll learn.
Donnie says vacuum. Anyway, for this impromptu plot summary, wow. How did they do this to the book?
Yeah.
Let's see. We have Captain Ahab, who, as a young ensign, he's listening in a submarine in the late 60s. They're doing some sort of drill in the Arctic Circle where he hears Moby Dick for the first time. And for some reason, the whale attacked the sub, and then and he lost his leg that way. Mm. Now, the first thing that jumped out at me here was that the Ahab in the book lost his leg on the expedition and turned right around to go back after the guy because he was obsessed.
Right. It's kind of the whole point of the character.
Right. This Ahab in the movie was so obsessed that he waited how long?
20 years? 30 years? 69 to 2010, so 30 years. No, 40 years almost. 41 years. My math isn't good tonight.
41 years. 41 years. That's not very obsessed.
No.
That's kind of like, you know what I'm going to do when I retire? I'm going to go back after that motherfucker.
So are you just leaving the plot summary there, or?
Well, the other inexplicable thing here in this plot is that the whale seems to go on a killing spree.
Oh, there's far more inexplicable things about the whale.
Well, just for starters.
Okay.
The whale, 41 years after they discovered it in the Arctic Circle or whatever, suddenly goes on this killing spree. As he starts to look for it, what was it doing in those 40 years? Just saying. That's all. Yeah. All right. So Ahab sends his crew out. They have all sorts of neat little tie-ins to the book. You know, the torpedoes named, you know, Fidela and, you know, all these little things, the one boat being named the Coffin, and, you know.
I didn't catch that.
Yes. they had all sorts of cute little tie-ins to the book. But they really, well, we'll get into the characters later, but they chase the whale, and I guess you could just say hilarity ensues.
Okay,
but,
yeah.
I could say they kidnap a scientist who is anything but Ishmael.
Named Michelle Herman.
Yeah.
So Michelle, Ishmael, and Herman Melville.
Yeah, I was wondering if she was named after Melville or Pee-wee Herman. I could guess. That was lame. All right.
And her sidekick, Pip.
Yeah. They did take, like, a few of his little spiels in the book, you know, because he gives different lectures and whatnot.
I noticed one direct quote. I'd strike the son if it insulted me. That's about it. Now, go ahead.
There were lots of lines taken.
I didn't notice.
Strike, you know, for the devil, you know, strike at the,
okay.
You know,
yeah,
the
yeah.
things.
Now, during the credits, it says adapted from a novel by Herman Melville. It should have said kind of sort of loosely based on the Cliff Notes for the novel by Herman Melville.
Shat upon the novel by Herman Melville.
We were discussing it after the show last week, and I predicted that it would resemble the novel in only that it was about a captain named Ahab obsessed with hunting a whale named Moby Dick. I wasn't far off.
Yeah. They did take little lines. I think the whale tour boat took, like, one of his little lectures about whales, which that's the one part of the book I could have really done without.
Yeah. Starbuck was pretty close.
Every now and then in the book, he would just interrupt the story. It was almost like Eric Idle came out and here we have this part of the whale. And you're just kind of like, all right, get back to the dudes in the boat. Try to get this thing, man.
Well, you're talking about the book. Yeah.
Yes.
That was fun because there was a whole section on cetology or cetology, the study of whales.
Right.
And then there were points when it wasn't even Ishmael talking, it was Melville himself addressing the reader.
Right. School teacher Herman Melville just, you know, giving us a lesson on some aspect of whaling or whales.
And talking about, you know, I referenced this in the last chapter, I'm just going to expand upon it now. Purely, a total Basil exposition.
What the...
There were numerous points where he would say, I mentioned this in the last chapter. Here I'm just going to tell you a little more about it.
Oh, yes.
Out of
yes.
place.
That is, he did do that an awful lot.
Now, back to the movie. I found out about this back in, I think it was October, on io9.com. Great site, highly recommended. And my jaw hit the ground. It was Christmas, or Christmas came early, because it was, you know, a B-movie based on a classic piece of literature starring Barry Bostwick. It's like our perfect movie.
You know, the one bad thing about this show is it has gotten me to hate Barry Bostwick. When we started this show, I really genuinely liked him. Uh-huh. You know, Rocky Horror.
Because all you knew was Rocky and maybe Spin City.
I remember him playing George Washington at one point in the 80s and liking that. And, of course, Spin City. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is the second work that we've done with him here. And, wow.
I have to say, much better in this one than in Megaforce.
I don't know.
I believe.
I really don't know.
He chewed some scenery, but overall he was believable, I thought. His performance, I think, was one of the few good things.
He was just trying to... I mean, that laughter and the "he tasks me" line. He's no Sean Connery.
No,
he's
no.
not even Ricardo Montalban, really.
No.
It's that's who he was trying to imitate, I felt.
Because,
you know?
Khan was based on Ahab, but...
All right. But, yeah.
and this is me nitpicking, but, okay. Barry Bostwick, I'm more ethnically Ambiguous, that's the word. I'm more ethnically ambiguous than Barry Bostwick, yet he's playing Ahab, who, according to the book, was Egyptian.
That's right.
One quick line I happened to notice,
If we want to get into nitpicks, though, good God.
Please don't. I just want.
Where do you start?
That's the end of my nitpicking, I think. My real nitpicking, because the rest is. Okay. Apparently, Moby Dick can fly.
I didn't even have as much of a problem with that as the fact that apparently the Bens don't exist.
Well, yeah. But, okay, there's a scene early on, and I posted this on Facebook earlier tonight. A few of you may have caught it. There's a sightseeing boat. Look, you know, for whale spotting, that's it. Whale spotting boat early in the movie. And they find a whale, and they say it's about to breach, which is when a whale comes, you know, dives up out of the water and back in.
Right.
Actual thing. It happens. So the whale breaches, and then as it's midair, Moby Dick comes up, swallows it whole. Now, in the book, they point out that a whale can only swallow something about the size of a person's arm. But yeah, it swallows this other whale whole. It dives back, goes back in the water, and then a millisecond after it hits the water, well, first off, it barely sends a wave when it hits. 600-foot whale, the thing's going to capsize the whale-watching boat. But then, a millisecond after it hits the water, it jumps back up and pretty much right over top of the boat. They point out that the first whale, the one that breached normally,
right?
They point out it was diving down and it was going to come back up and breach, you know, diving down, getting effectively a running start.
Right.
Moby Dick does this, you know, milliseconds after hitting the water, he's back up and higher than he was the first time. Later in the movie, he jumps over half of an atoll. And then
it was kind of a free willy thing there.
And then proceeds to crawl on land. Now, okay, whales are mammals, they can breathe air. They can't crawl.
Well, and it doesn't even have the tentacles of Sharktopus. No. So. I guess the question is, who would win in a battle, Sharktopus or Moby Dick?
Well, obviously Moby Dick's larger, but I think Sharktopus because, you know...
razor-sharp tentacles.
Tentacles and the spikes on the side of the neck and the teeth. And, you know, sharks are actually built to swallow things, large things.
Yeah. The, almost want to get into special effects yet, but my nitpick, well, you know, there were the bends, of course. Uh-huh. I mean, they were 3,500 meters below sea level.
Yeah.
And they surfaced in like how many minutes? Oh, all fine.
Oh, and yeah, that quick surface, where basically the sub went up like a missile.
Yes.
That's the scene you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
I may not be an expert in science, but...
And I don't think subs are designed to do that in general.
Well, that
is... It's a special super sub, I know.
They were taking a lot from Hunt for Red October, which I am a sucker for those types of movies. And to put that into Moby Dick, I thought was a pretty cool concept.
Mm-hmm.
The whole silent running, you know, Hunt for Red October thing.
And actually, I gotta say, the setup wasn't bad. Aside from the fact that what was Moby Dick doing for the 40 years? Fair point. But there were all these reports of various vessels being, you know, destroyed by a giant whale, and they were out to hunt the whale down. Made sense.
The problem is though that the Navy here couldn't tell the difference between a submarine attack and a whale attack. Did you not notice that?
Yeah.
They were wondering if the tour boat was attacked by Ahab's sub, the Pequod.
Uh-huh. I just mean the general the setup for why they were looking for Moby Dick.
Well, actually, it makes him look far more sane than the Ahab in the book.
Well, I mean,
you know, trying to save lives.
Well, and the Ahab, well, Ahab in the book.
Ahab in the book was just, well, I gotta get that motherfucker.
He was obsessed, but you don't know that until a chapter or two after he's introduced.
Which is like, what, 60 chapters into the book or something? Like, he's just completely not like even there.
Two-thirds of the way. It's about two-thirds of the way before they even set foot on the Pequod.
It reminded me of the first Star Trek movie.
Yeah. And, okay, let's just get into, you referenced this in the summary.
Sure.
Fedallah?
Yes.
Why?
What, the...
In the book, for those who haven't read it, Fedallah is Ahab's personal harpoon man, and yes, basically his spiritual advisor, for lack of a better way of putting it.
It's like having the Westminster or Westboro Baptist Church as your spiritual advisor.
He's kind of, you know, the dark mystic who has the king's ear.
Yeah.
It's done, you know, in a lot of fiction, and I thought it was a nice touch. In the movie, Fedallah is a torpedo.
Well, they did all sorts of things naming.
It's a cheap reference.
Yeah.
But the name, not even the spirit. Because that's one thing I did like about Starbuck, is his second in command. It was the same guy.
Yeah. And I think that's where the movie really lacked. I mean, yeah, there are a bunch of things that they could have done differently and better. But you have these great characters like Stubb.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Stubb is like Groucho Marx.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
60 years or 70 years before the Marx Brothers even existed.
And kind of, I don't want to say savage, but kind of, you know, a darker version of Groucho Marx in a lot of ways.
Actually, he's more like Randall from Clerks.
Yes, that is a good one.
when he finds somebody that, you know, doesn't speak English and has this guy who, you know, volunteers to say, interpret for him whatever he wants to interpret, you know,
yeah,
the scene is hilarious.
Right.
He says, tell him I diddled him.
Stubbs in the movie, I didn't even know who it was until, say, the last 15 minutes.
Well, yeah, you introduce him. You could kind of see him. He could possibly be that guy that was in the book,
mm-hmm.
but they never show you in the movie. They never, you know, he has like five lines in the whole thing.
Queequeg, major character in at least the first half of the book.
Yeah.
Kind of a throwaway in the movie. Didn't even have the tattoos.
Right.
Which is kind of Queequeg's defining characteristic. Is
he kind of gets lost in the book, too, really.
Well, you kind of forget about it. Which fits, because, you know, that was he was a major part of Ishmael's life up until he got onto the boat.
Right.
And then Ahab kind of became a bit more important because Ahab was threatening everybody's life.
Right.
So Queequeg, his friend, just kind of takes a back seat at that point. Yes, but so they reference a lot of the characters, but only in name. Pip was very minor in the book, and he was actually, I think, more of a character in the movie.
Definitely.
He kind of served a purpose in the movie for a while. Although he says he asks when they first introduce him before they get kidnapped by the sub. He asks if he's going to get paid. He took the job without getting paid.
Well, I think he was getting paid at the very end of the job.
Okay, maybe, yeah.
That's what the deal. I think the deal was that, you know,
you live, you make it.
Me?
Yeah, then you get paid. Right.
Because I got to get paid.
Gotcha. Just to backtrack a touch, sort of. You mentioned the interpreter scene in the book. The Russian scene in the movie. You remember?
Oh.
Well, I don't think that was a direct reference. But there is this character, Boomer, who is chasing after Ahab, not a reference, in no way a reference to the book, I don't think.
No.
But he's trying to find Ahab, and he finds that there was a survivor from one of the supposed Moby Dick attacks in the hospital, a Russian woman.
Why didn't they just use Sharktopus? Mm. Why didn't they just make this like a series?
But they make a point of saying that this Russian woman doesn't speak English. And so Boomer goes in, and you figure, okay, he can speak Russian. And he can.
Right. Right.
He starts off speaking Russian. And then they're both speaking English suddenly.
Well, that was a reference to Hunt for Red October, I think.
Oh, it was? Okay, okay.
Because that's exactly the way they did it in Hunt for Red October, where they were speaking in Russian with subtitles, and then he's reading something, and in the middle of this, that, you know, the camera kind of goes up to his mouth, and then kind of pans around, and he ends what he's reading in English, and it's just okay. Kind of a suspension of disbelief that, you know, they're speaking Russian still, but for our benefit.
See, they did it. They did it gradually and subtly there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty cool scene.
Kind of like, and I know you're not going to be happy about me referencing this in any kind of a positive light, but Battlefield Earth. When he learns their language, it's a subtle, slow. He picks up a word here and there, and it becomes English.
Right. Right.
This, it just turns on a dime after about three sentences, and suddenly it's English.
Yeah, they didn't.
And she still had an accent.
They didn't do it very well here, but especially as Hunt for Red October, they didn't do it as well.
If it was Russian that we were hearing as English, so they didn't have to subtitle, why did she still have a bloody accent?
Well, yeah, some people still had accents in that movie too, just to sell it to us. But yeah, but you're right. They had a completely great scene from the book that they just threw away and didn't do. I don't know how they would have pulled that off, you know, him talking to another captain who didn't speak English. And then he diddled him.
Okay, so do we want to get into the effects now? Because
yes.
I'm just going to keep jumping through my notes if we don't find some kind of direction here. there was... And this was mentioned on IMDb, and I didn't believe it until I saw it in the movie. On the close-ups of Moby Dick's eye, which there are about three or four throughout the movie.
Yeah.
You can actually see the mesh. The flat polygons. Because that's how they do 3D effects, is they're made up of flat-sided polygons. You can see the flat faces of the polygons when you see his eye.
Now, I understand the bad special effects for Sharktopus.
Possibly worse than Sharktopus in this case.
I think the bad special effects fit Sharktopus.
It kind of helped it, yeah.
Right. This wasn't supposed to be funny, though.
They were taking this completely seriously, which when you see Sharktopus crawling on land... Oh, Sharktopus, I'm switching the two. When you see Moby Dick crawling on land, you wonder, are they taking this seriously?
Right. It's quite easy for them to have... Yeah, to mess up the two movies because, you know, they're the almost quality. The same plot.
Yeah.
You know, if you could switch Ahab and the professor Glenn? That made him.
Okay, yeah. Eric Roberts, yeah.
Yeah. They almost did the same performance. Yeah. Although I think Barry Boss, or not, I think Eric Roberts put a better performance than Barry Boss.
Possibly, yeah. It's a tough call.
He's phoning it in.
Yeah.
But he was also, you know, I'm just going to drink scotch or whatever to talk to him and stuff.
Right.
But this, he was really, I was waiting for him to tell the whale that revenge was a dish best served cold, and it's very cold in space. That makeup that they put on him too. What the hell was that?
Well, he's supposed to have a white scar.
Yeah.
It's in the book.
Right.
So that was their attempt at the white scar. Did you notice his first name was Jonah? I thought that was a nice touch.
Oh yeah, I did notice that. And of course Melville talks to us ad nauseum about Jonah. So.
Exactly. That's why I said it was a nice touch. And again, with regard to the acting, okay, it's one thing when they're on the boat and the acting is at one level there when you've got Bostwick chewing the scenery and the chick from Xena doing what she always does. And
is
the
that
random,
where she's from?
Yeah, the blonde from Xena. And the random backup dancers who kind of have the same name as the characters from the book, but that's about it.
Right.
But then they switch to the subplot that they tacked on to the book. You have an admiral and a, you know, captain who are trying to hunt down Ahab before he kills people. The acting went to a new low when you got to those scenes.
Although I thought the acting was better in this than it was in Sharktopus.
On the whole, when you were on the sub, yes. But they went to those two characters. For some reason, the acting just dropped.
Yeah, Boomer had his moments.
Boomer had his moments. The Admiral was horrible.
The Admiral was yeah. He must have been like a friend of a producer or somebody that just, you know, financed.
Maybe it's just the Admiral. Because come to think of it, Boomer, when he was on the sub, was pretty good. Whereas, at least as good as anybody else.
Although I thought their acting was hideous at the very end.
Well, the end was, well, I think after Moby Dick crawled on land, I just checked out. I didn't I was kind of done at that point. Moby Dick crawls on land, jumps over most of an atoll. She's going to outrun a nuke. That's the ending of the movie.
Why didn't you say spoiler alert before that?
I don't know.
Because it was Boomer and Stubb at the very end. They're just like, well, you can't outrun a torpedo.
And they're just basically decide, okay, we're dead. We're just going to sit here. Stubbs lights up a cigar. Boomer takes a drink. They're done.
It's not exactly Slim Pickens riding the missile
no.
at the end of Doctor Strangelove.
and we're jumping way the hell around here. But what was the big deal with Moby Dick can only be killed by something that's touched him?
Are they thinking like of vampires or something?
I don't know. Fidala, the missile, or the torpedo, was made from the hull of Ahab's original sub. And apparently he thinks that Moby Dick can only be killed by something that's touched him.
Only when he's in his coffin.
Why? Well, I could pretty much say that about the whole movie. Why was a scientist in 2010 using a microcassette recorder?
Hey, I've seen them in use, but then again, I've also seen typewriters in use.
Okay, maybe there are some who do. And was it to me, or when Moby Dick first appeared? Actually, when the sub first appeared and when Moby Dick first appeared, did it get really blurry?
The visuals on this were just downright hideous.
Yeah. I think the only good visual was the chick from Xena in the bikini top, but...
Yeah. And the special effects were really just straight from Land of the Lost.
Yeah.
From the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And we've advanced since then.
That April, I think, was used on that show. The where they ended up the island where they all died, except for her. It reminded me of that show a lot.
Because she outran a nuke.
Because she's Ishmael and she has to survive.
Yeah, and Ishmael, it took me a little while to warm up to his character in the book.
Yeah.
But once you do, it's like... All right. I could hang with this guy for 600 and something pages.
That's all? Felt like more.
Yeah, it was 625. And those were large pages, actually, because I was like a special edition. So maybe it was about 800 if you're reading like a novel size.
Did yours have at the end all of the references, extracts?
Most. What do you mean? Like the map where they had a map where about... tracking the expedition.
Mine had, and because it was the audio version, they were reading various quotes that many of which Melville took almost directly from previous sources.
I think it was at the beginning, actually, and there was a nod to Rime of the Ancient Mariner in there, too.
Yeah.
In fact, Melville talks about Rime of the Ancient Mariner for like a chapter.
There's a whole chapter called The Albatross,
Yes. Talks about Coleridge in like a paragraph footnote.
Now back to the movie. When did Michelle get the scientist get as obsessed with killing Moby Dick as Ahab?
I don't think she did,
because initially she's you can't take revenge on an animal and all of this, and by the end she's right there with him.
I don't think
she's helping track it down and right there ready to kill it with Ahab.
The way I saw it, maybe she wanted to stop it from killing more.
Maybe.
None of that made any sense about the whale killing spree.
And especially when you gave the, you know, Ahab speech from the book, which I had, you know, the audio version, so, you know, a great reader, Frank Mahler. You compare that with Bostick's speech from the movie, which, you know, referenced it heavily, but just kind of missed something.
Like Ricardo Montalban on lithium.
Yeah.
Is what I strike at thee.
Oh, and did you love the part where they fired the... I think it was when they fired Fadala at him. And Moby Dick just dodged it. It's coming straight at him. He just moves very quickly. Like, it's maybe, you know, into scale, maybe 10 meters to the side. Like that. A giant whale.
Well, in both the book and movie...
It was like
really...
a karate move. But you underwater, really... giant whale.
You just wonder why no one just said, okay, enough already.
So you didn't even like the book.
Well, I like the book.
Okay.
But, you know...
Melville needed an editor. I'll concede that.
But, you know, Starbuck needed to grow a pair.
Oh, yes. Oh, in that sense. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know...
You know, take him down.
Screw you. Yeah. We're going home.
Right. Definitely.
When he says to the point that, you know, by obeying you, I'm disobeying God.
Right. And I think they kind of punked him out a bit in the movie, which kind of makes a bit more sense.
Yeah, he goes all Will Riker on us.
Yeah, in the movie. Which, so you get why he's just following, he gets to that I'm just following orders place, where he never really did in the book. He complained the whole nine yards to the point where he was the one who pointed out that Fadala had died, and which is the moment when Ahab comes to his senses briefly.
Yeah. Kind of late. Yeah. He found this piece of wood out in the sea. Just him and the whale, kind of.
Which is the part that I think really bugged me about Fadala being the missile.
Yeah.
Because that was a great moment in the book when... Starbuck points out that Fadala is dead and lashed to the side of Moby Dick because he had gotten caught up in a line. And
what was weird was that they didn't even know he was gone until someone was like, hey,
yeah,
there's Fadala. And they thought that he may have actually, like, you know, ran away or something.
Yeah, jumped ship, yeah. But that's, you know, well, that is the moment when Ahab comes to his senses. Okay, it's very shortly before he dies, but still, he has that moment. He doesn't have that moment in the movie.
No.
Because that's when you finally, at least for me, when I finally, can't say related to him, but I finally felt for him.
What they did here, they took Melville's book. They took Hunt for Red October.
Mm-hmm.
They took Land of the Lost, oddly enough.
Yeah. But and they a little Sharktopus.
They also took Apocalypse Now.
True.
Where Ahab is very, you know,
Kurtz,
Walter
yeah.
Kurtz. And Boomer is, you know, Willard.
Right, sends right.
Chase after him.
Wow.
They wind up joining together.
Uh-huh.
You would think, you know, if I told you that that's what this movie was going to be, you would think that this movie was going to be like a five brain.
Oh, easy. I was convinced when I saw the trailer back in October that this was a easy five brains.
Right. Like, good God, you can't go wrong with any of those movies.
Right.
They're fantastic movies. It's a fantastic book. And damn.
Yeah.
But it goes wrong.
It goes wrong at almost every turn.
Yeah.
And I normally, fans of the show will know, I normally love that. I find great amusement out of watching a movie completely and utterly fail on every level.
But the problem, well, you know what? I don't mind watching a movie fail if it doesn't have anything to it. Like Sharktopus, that was enjoyable.
Well, but that was an intentional fail, too.
Right. And it was fun. And it was supposed to be fun.
Right.
This was not Beach Blanket Bingo.
This was not supposed to be fun. They were taking this shit seriously.
Yeah.
How?
Well, you start with the horrible special effects. The whale is, you know, such an important character in the book as he is in the movie, too.
Well, that's the whole thing, and that's the important thing in the book. One of the important things, aside from the mammoth lesson on whaling, is who is the antagonist and who's the protagonist?
Right, right.
It muddles that.
Now, in the movie, of course, obviously, the whale who goes on this random killing spree after not being seen much for 40 years is for some reason, although they tried to play with that, oh, who's hunting who, you know, I mean, he needed to call in reinforcements in an airstrike to get rid of this thing.
Yeah.
But our Navy couldn't tell the difference between a submarine attacking a whaleboat and a whale attacking it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no blast, you know, points or anything like that. No firepower used on it. Mm-hmm. Just some big thing came up from the ocean and smashed it and bit it. Yet the admiral was saying, well, you know, we think that it was the sub.
Mm-hmm.
Did he build jaws on the sub?
Yeah. How is the sub going to fight?
So if our Navy can't distinguish the difference between the two, we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
But this wasn't really a tale of personal revenge, it would seem.
No.
That's the problem with the whale being, you know, because in the book, the whale only went after those who went after it.
Right. It's an animal. That's what they do. Right.
Someone tried to fish it, and it was going to take a limb.
And that is the big travesty here. Because, yes, Melville got a little heavy-handed with the whaling lessons. But without the setting of whaling, you have no Moby Dick.
Right.
They have to be hunting whales for the story to work.
Right. I mean, we don't. Maybe it was a little, you know, TMI there, the whaling stuff.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked how they did incorporate some of it into the movie. Like,
I did. I got to admit, I did enjoy those sections. I'm an information addict, so I kind of enjoyed the lessons. But yeah, got a little overdone.
White, you know, the significance of the color white. He had a whole chapter on that,
uh-huh.
And they kind of worked that into the movie a little bit.
Which just a little word of warning, if you and of course we highly recommend reading the book for those who haven't, but it does turn a bit racist in that section.
Oh yeah,
consider the time it was written. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, he goes into this whole section on the meaning of the color white in different circumstances, and yes.
Yeah. And I mean, the things in the book that are, some of them are just, you know, mind-boggling that he wrote them at that time. You know, considering, you know, every, you know, candle you burn and every, you know, minute of light you use, because, you know, for human blood dropped into that. I mean, line is huge.
Oh, yeah.
You think of every mile you drive, or, you know, well, I look around my house right now and I have like every light turned on, but you know, that's another story altogether.
Right.
So there's human blood just dripping from all these light fixtures.
And just to roll back again, tangenting on the book. Okay, early on when he first introduces Queequeg,
yeah,
he makes this whole spiel. There's this whole spiel about how you should be tolerant of other people's beliefs and, you know, not judge on appearance.
Which was quite unusual for the time, too. Well,
quite progressive for the time. I loved that.
Yeah.
And then he's talking about white, and he drops that line. Just to give it away, he says, he's talking about the, you know, the meaning of the color white in different scenarios, and he says, the white man has dominion over all of the dusky races or some dusky tribes or something of that nature.
Hmm. And yeah, that
was a little
bit
of a U-turn there, Harriman.
And it's something because he, you know, he served with all these people too and met, you know, people, you know, of different races and stuff throughout the world.
Well, that's why I was reading on Wikipedia. That's the reason for all of the lessons is because he did time on a whaling vessel, and he thought it should be documented.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of my particular favorite parts of the book, they inexplicably, it's almost like Quentin Tarantino writing in 1850. He fucks with the timeline.
Oh, yeah.
I love the chapters where he's suddenly in the future, in a bar in Lima, talking to the patrons about the story that was relayed to him by this other ship that they happened to meet in passing. We've talked about this off the air because, you know, while I've spent way too much time reading this because I only get like so many minutes a day to read, and that's if the train, you know, allows me to read on it.
Right.
But I've compared this to a progressive rock album.
Yeah. It will fuck with your mind.
Yes.
There's, and we talked about this off air, but let's just put it out there.
Sure.
There's random lessons on whales, cytology. There is Melville himself musing on, say, the meaning of the color white or various other things as himself, not as Ishmael or any other character. He just addresses the reader out of nowhere.
Whaling law.
The Doctrine of Loose Fish, which I love that line. It was almost the title.
You're right.
For this episode. Mm-hmm. And then there are, and I think I got off easy on this part because I listened to it. There are parts that are set up as plays.
Yes. He just completely starts turning it into a script form. And really, you know, he compares it to a drama throughout, you know, bringing someone to the stage.
Right, right.
When he's introducing a character. So he's playing it that you're watching a play while reading his book. And it's, yeah, it does mess with your head. So for all that beauty.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece.
That would if you could get a movie out of this.
If you can get past the period specific racism and sexism of the book, it's a bloody masterpiece.
Yeah.
And they did this to it.
Yeah, this really made me want to go watch the, I think it was a 98 version with Patrick Stewart as Ahab.
I was thinking about that too. I would love to, I intend to watch that now. Although yeah. I think the book is largely unfilmable, but it's got to be better than this.
I think the book could make an awesome film. I mean,
the book, a truly faithful version, is impossible.
And I even think the concept that they had here could have been done.
Yeah.
I think I would rather have seen it in space.
If they didn't call it Moby Dick, and if it just happened to be loosely based on it, inspired by it, and it was done well, okay, yeah, I would have been done a bit into that.
Since we're on to, I guess, sequels and remakes.
Okay, yeah, I'm done with my notes.
I would have loved to have seen this in space.
What would they be hunting?
Some sort of, space whale creature. And I'm sure Star Trek has, you know, come close to pulling it off here and there. I know the Doomsday device, that episode in the original series with the crazy Commodore who, you know, rams the thing.
And Kirk himself was largely inspired by Ahab in many ways.
Then they referenced it too. Yeah. I think in Next Generation where
and Spock is basically
obsessed, so they called him it. Someone called him Ahab, and then they actually explained where they got it from.
I mean, Spock was basically Starbuck, but
yeah, I guess so.
The rationalist. But yeah, I think
I almost think of him as, you know, Queequeg or something, you know.
Well, in the sense of being the foreigner, yeah, but he was the rationalist.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had a Queequeg at the time. Really, they really just didn't. I don't know if they had. Well, you could kind of say Scotty and Stubbs.
Yeah.
Flask
kind of gets lost in the shuffle.
Oh, yeah, in the book and in the other senses, because I don't remember much about Flask.
Yeah, me neither.
So yeah, sequel's obviously out because, you know, everyone dies except
the whales there.
Shell and the whale.
In fact, if you really look at this, they look like they wanted to make a sequel to this.
Oh yeah, there's a shot of Moby Dick as it's swimming away. Was there a beacon or something on it? Because I thought I saw that, something blinking.
Something like that, who knows?
It was the bump bump bum shot.
Right, that, he lives and he's going to come back. and hopefully fight Sharktopus. For the love of Christ, Moby Dick versus Sharktopus must be made.
After we finish recording, we have to talk about Megapython versus Gatorade. That's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah, that's going to be done in the future. Although I think our High Seas trilogy here...
Well, not for next week, but I have to give you some information about that one. Anyway, Anyone who reads IO9 knows what I'm talking about. But yeah, there is that shot, like, you know, he'll be back.
Right. And it'll be personal next time.
But Ahab's dead.
Yeah.
What's the point of the shark... I'm doing it again. What's the point of the whale coming back if the guy who was obsessed with killing the whale is dead?
Because there'll be another person obsessed with them.
Unless Michelle gets obsessed with them.
Yeah. She'll run out of microcassettes and want to hunt him down.
Now, remakes, please. Somebody.
Call me Michelle.
Do it justice. Somebody, I mean, the 98 one, it's Patrick Stewart. It has to be brilliant. I would like to see another version done right.
Well, I feel like the dude from Hamlet 2, you know, I just got it. Michelle Ishmael.
Didn't I mention that earlier?
Yeah, I guess so.
But, you know, I see, actually, Spielberg doing a kick-ass Moby Dick. He's not a director I go to often, but he could do it.
I could see that. I could definitely see. I mean,
he's got the name. He'll have the budget.
I really would like to see it not CGI'd. You know, you gotta get the
big rubber wall.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because when you CGI
off guys in a suit,
when you CGI him, you wind up, you know, doing crazy things like having him jump out of the air and go onto land, and
you could CGI it, but keep it in your pants. I mean,
yeah, I guess so.
Figuratively speaking.
You know, there is one part of the book we didn't talk about.
Okay.
Was he writing a gay porn?
Yeah, okay. It's set on a whaling vessel in the mid-1800s. Lots of talk of sperm and semen.
Yeah. The scene...
Spermaceti, something, you know, at the time used as a heating oil that's taken from a whale's head. They're still not sure what it does, actually. What its actual intended purpose in whale's head is. Nobody knows. And then semen, guys on a boat.
Right. But just the scene where they're cleaning out the whale that they... The first whale that they killed.
Mm-hmm.
And just the talk of sperm being everywhere and everything. Yeah. And of course, I'm reading this on the train to or from work, just trying not to...
Yeah.
Giggle or snicker or burst out into open belly
laughter.
Right.
Yeah, there's a reason the village people recorded in the Navy.
Or as Sam Kinison said, they're going to use me like the only girl on a pirate ship.
So are we off the brains?
I think we are. Because we didn't really talk about who we'd actually cast.
Oh, that's why. This. Okay, yeah, good point. Who would be a good Ahab? But I'm kind of stuck.
Hopkins.
Well, okay, yeah. And not even as a joke, yeah.
I know, I was like, damn it, you know, I would wait to be funny with it, but, you know, he's the guy to go to.
Ishmael can be anybody, really, he's kind of random.
Yeah, get Zach Quinto from, since he's Spock now.
Actually, he's a good call for Starbuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think about him. I was going with Jamie Bamber, who was Apollo on the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, kind of a Starbuck kind of character, which is ironic since there was a Starbuck on the show who is nothing like Starbuck from Moby Dick.
Now, I'm against this Ishmael being just this, I don't know. I don't know where you'd work a woman into the cast.
Well, no.
Because, you know, having an all-male cast
at
is
the
kind of
these
days.
Well, there are a couple women at the beginning, but that's about it.
Yeah.
But if you go with the traditional... are we updating it? Are we changing it, the setting at all?
I kind of like the concept they had. Just, you know, redoing that, you know, making it a little bit, you know...
Well, nobody still whales, right? Aside from certain Inuit tribes.
True.
I think they're the only ones who can legally whale.
Make it that the whale was the aggressor, and say Ahab got attacked maybe not 40 years earlier.
You basically want to take this movie and do a better version of this movie.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a straight-up version of Moby Dick, the book. But if you want to...
That could do that is John Bonham.
If you want to improve upon the movie, wow. I still have issues with it not being about whalers. And you can't really...
whalers?
And also, if you make Moby Dick the aggressor, you lose a big point of the book.
Yeah, you do. Okay, so if we're back to 1851...
I mean, you could update it. You could make poachers, illegal whalers. There's a way you can set it modern day.
That is good. So poachers, illegal whalers, maybe not necessarily from Nantucket, which, you know, we all know was the be-all, end-all of the world back then, as Herman Melville painfully tells us.
So you can't update it. I think you're still with the all male cast.
Yeah, pretty much, because a chick looking like that out at sea.
She's not gonna last.
No, that just wouldn't work.
So again, I mean, okay, Stubbs would be interesting to cast. Who do you think for Stubbs?
I'd go with Randall from Clerks.
Yes, actually, yeah, he from Jeff Anderson. Yeah.
Yes, there you go.
And let's see. Oh, okay. If you're putting him as Stubbs, we got to throw Brian O'Halloran as Ishmael. It works.
As the ship's going down, I'm not even supposed to be here today.
Yes. Jason Mewes is Pip because he really doesn't have much of a part.
Okay, wait a minute.
You knew I was just going to keep on that tangent.
This isn't the Muppet version.
I'm doing the Kevin Smith version, yes. Couldn't resist.
And Sweetums is Moby Dick. And Gonzo is Teshtego or whatever.
Okay, so back to brains.
Back to brains. Wow, I've been back and forth about this. Because, I mean, I liked all the movies they took. I really liked the concept they had. And really wish they'd put this together in a, halfway decent manner. It would have been nice. But they didn't. They really pissed all over this book.
Yeah.
They had some horrendous acting in it, too. But, I mean, in general, the cast was good. They just had some people that just did not belong, though. That admiral. Just scenes that didn't make any sense. So, I'm going to give it a 2.5, I think, which is what I did last week, too, isn't it?
It was. Okay, I didn't hate Bostwick's performance. And there were a few things that I thought were interesting. I thought Starbuck did a good job. But overall, they wrecked it. I'm going to go 1.5.
Wow.
My second lowest rating to date, by the way.
Yeah.
I just really had issues with this.
It didn't fit, you know? Like, Sharktopus, all of that, the bad acting.
It was fun. That's the difference.
Worked.
Like we've said in the past, they had fun, so we had fun. They didn't have fun with this.
No. This was a very dreary film. And, you know, the book, of course, is a tragedy, too.
Oh, it's dreary, but it's supposed to be dreary, and it's dreary done well.
But the problem is...
with periodic lessons about whaling.
But this would be like watching Oedipus with, you know, someone dressed as like a clown in the middle of it. You know?
Okay.
Somebody in a gorilla suit walking out in the middle of a Shakespeare play.
Okay, no, this is... Okay, I've got it.
Okay.
This is Oedipus done by the theater company from Waiting for Guffman with that guy in the clown in the gorilla suit walking through.
Right.
There's nothing good about it.
And Justin Timberlake as Iago.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, just...
Yeah. So what have we learned?
That there's a lot of sperm to go around, apparently.
I learned a couple of things. First, I learned that it's not like a sound. It's like the absence of sound. Like a hole in the water. And secondly, I learned more about 18th century whaling than I ever thought I would possibly have a reason to know.
Hey, he really did take you on the ship.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. You felt like you were there with them.
So, until next week when we will be reviewing Deep Blue Sea. I said it right that time.
Deep Blue something. I don't know.
Go to zombietakeout.com. Check out the mart, the episode description, the episode itself. The links to Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, our RSS feed. By the way, please, we've never asked this before. I don't know why, but please rate us and review us on iTunes. It will push us up in the ratings there, and everybody
nice.
Goes to iTunes. So please leave us some love on iTunes.
Yeah.
Also, take the PodTrack survey. That will hopefully get us some advertisers.
It could happen.
Yes, please. Also, you can leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZT01 or alphanumerically challenged 414-368-9861. And always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. So if you don't actually live there, you might want to keep that in mind.
Always from the middle of Milwaukee.
And so, until next week, always remember, never forget, wherever you are in life, there you are.
There you are.
Would you call this a normal day?
Nah. I see walls every day. But I've never experienced anything like that.
Okay, I know you had a title in mind, but I had to go start at the beginning after the last episode. I lost my place. I marathoned the book in like 4 days.
Oh, yeah.
And titles just kept jumping out at me. I've got the 275th lay, the 300th lay, the 777th lay, a long lay. A long lay, an exceedingly long lay, one of my favorites, a green hand's lay, a lay indeed in such a lay. Those are all the lay titles.
Right, right.
Of them, my favorite is an exceedingly long lay. A swearing good man, Quahog Hedgehog, a butterless man, the doctrine of loose fish, my other favorite, tell him I diddled him.
Yes, Jesus Christ, that's a line and a half.
So, okay, I think we both like Tell Him I Diddled Him.
Yeah, this is what I came up with.
Okay.
Of course, there's the
sperm one.
The greatest money shot ever told.
Right.
There's sperm everywhere. although I was kind of thinking of just a question. Did Herman Melville write a gay porn or an episode to Land of the Lost? To address both the book and the movie.
Sure. So of these, I'm partial to. Well, you like tell him I diddled him. That was got the strongest reaction out of you.
Yeah.
So want to go with that one?
Maybe, I don't know.
I think the doctrine of loose fish not as funny but fitting.
Yeah.
Particularly to the movie.
Oh, and of course, there's the drum solo references.
Oh, yeah.
Or there's What's Eating Moby Dick? Because wasn't there a Moby Grape?
What's eating Gilbert Grape?
Right, there was a Moby Grape and a Gilbert Grape.
There's the band Moby Grape, yeah.
Yes.
Based on a novel by John Bonham.
Right.
we'll hammer it out afterwards.
There's too many titles for this one.
Yeah.
A drum solo.
Because that, based on a novel, I'm kind of liking based on a novel by John Bonham, just because it's completely left field.
That's probably our best one.
That one?
Because,
okay.
Because, I mean, we have such great titles, but they don't really, tell us. I mean, Telefy titled them is hilarious, but it's hilarious on its own without telling us.
If you get the reference, it's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. And all these are all funny if you know the book.
Yeah.
Based on a novel by John Bonham, other people who haven't read the book will get.
Yeah.
intros, I got three. This one was just a gold mine for intros and titles and shit.
Well, yeah, you remember the one that I read to you last week.
Well, this is actually from the intros I pulled from the movie.
Yeah.
First one to bag a Russian boomer gets a case of zombie takeout. I can already smell the zombie takeout. And my favorite, we cannot have a sub-commander off the reservation with a boatload of zombie takeout. We like that one?
That is the best of the three. But we can't read the line from the book.
What do you got?
You remember the one? Come, let us squeeze hands all around. Nay, let us all squeeze ourselves into each other. Let us squeeze ourselves universally into the very milk and sperm of zombie takeout.
Okay, yeah, I can't resist that.
I mean, I'm reading this fucking thing on a train, and I'm like, oh my god.
I can't
that
resist.
That is too funny.
Okay, I can't resist that one. That's yours.
Whipping out my cell phone and writing that line in the notes, mm-hmm. in the notepad.